Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the Blog Talk Radio studio right here in the heart of Hudson County, ladies and gentlemen. It's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you the three-time, and I do say again, the three-time award-winning politically direct, and I am New Jersey's premier journalist and top 100 Latino in 2021 via the Latino Spirit online magazine, Fernando Uribe. And I want to welcome you all here on the 6th of May. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, happy May to you all and for all of my fellow Taurus who enjoy the month of May as their birth month. I know, again, shout out to everybody there celebrating this month. Looking forward to another healthy year, God willing, here as my birthdays come up shortly. To all the other Taurus here that I know listening tonight on Blog Talk Radio, God bless you all. And certainly, again, we appreciate you tuning in from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout the Garden State. And, of course, to all my friends throughout the U.S. of A. Now, you can write to the show's inbox, folks, at any time. It's politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. If you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic, I'd love to hear from you. Once again, right to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Now, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. I do have to update that page. I'm not going to lie to you folks, but you can certainly check out my personal Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. Tons of new followers, plenty of likes. I know many of you enjoy my Instagram stories, whether it's about pro wrestling, sports, politics, I don't know, memes, motivational stuff, or just, I don't know, funny things you see on the internet, you know what I'm saying? So definitely check it out there on my Instagram, and also hit me up on Twitter, folks, at NoFilterUribe. That's at NoFilterUribe. And for all of you Facebook subscribers, please take a moment and go to the official page for Politically Direct, like it, and tell your friends to do the same. Now, I do want to hear from you tonight at some point, ladies and gentlemen. Call me toll-free, and don't be shy. Once again, 818-572-8032. Once again, the toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032. And, of course, I'll take some calls, you know, that I'm sure you'll have, and I'll gladly take them later in the show. I do have a great guest coming up in just a moment if you want to stick around for that. Again, folks, toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032. And our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, folks, check out Insider NJ by going to the website, www.insidernj.com, for what I will argue is the best coverage of the political scene anywhere in the state of New Jersey. And I'll tell you something, you know, people might say what they want. And I just saw a funny email the other day from NJ.com saying, hey, you know, support the media or support journalism that means something. I don't know about you folks, but it's definitely not NJ.com. That's for certain. But, you know, you can come to depend on it. And that's Insider NJ, folks. So when you click on it, obviously you'll see the subscribe button on the upper right-hand corner. And once you do, you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So in the mornings when you're watching, let's say, one of the sports shows like I do, I watch Fox Sports. So I'm either watching First Things First or Undisputed or The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Occasionally I'll watch ESPN First Take. I mean, I can't always stomach Screaming A. Smith and the other idiot Max Kellerman there, along with the other clown, Molly, but whatever. But regardless, I'm sure like many of you, I'm scrolling through my inbox on my phone or in front of my desktop. And guess what? When I do, I see the morning intelligence briefing right there waiting for me. And again, folks, it's the best journalism. It's the best source about what's going on in New Jersey politics. And certainly I'm proud to be a part of the Insider NJ team. I can't say enough about the Graham family, specifically Mike Graham, who continues to believe in this show. Certainly my boss, who I know he hates when I drop his name on the air, but Pete O'Nelia, my general manager and boss at Insider NJ. Certainly, you know, without their support since this podcast started in January of 2018, you know, 3 years later and three awards later, I mean, hey, the proof is in the pudding there. So it continues to be reputable and successful. And again, that's, you know, folks, that's not possible without you, my loyal listening audience. And of course, being part of the Insider NJ family. You know, it's like anything. It's like if you ever play organized sports like I did, you know, sometimes you don't like your teammates, but collectively you all work hard for a common good, and that's making Insider NJ the best, again, source for politics in the state of New Jersey. Again, I work with a great team. Starts with Editor-in-Chief Max Pizarro. Don't really care for his political views at all, but he's an amazing writer, so you definitely want to check out his column. Same thing for Jay Lasser. I know he doesn't like me. I don't like him. It's probably, to be very honest with you, it's probably just, you know, testosterone and, you know, the pissy matchup that, you know, guys have, right? Testosterone. But anyway, you know, I respect Jay as a journalist. He's a great writer. Again, I'm not fond of him, and I know he's not fond of me, but we find a way to coexist along with other great journalists on the staff. Fred Snowflake, I love his columns. He's a regular here on the podcast, as well as Alan Steinberg, who oftentimes drives me crazy too, and he's also a regular here on the show. And I enjoy working with them. So hopefully if you've listened to the episodes, I think hopefully you found them to be very informative. But again, folks, Insider NJ, nobody does it better. Once again, check it out daily, www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. All right, folks, again, as a reminder, the opinions and views expressed here tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, or our sponsors, again, who are so dedicated to us. So again, ladies and gentlemen, 818-572-8032, our toll-free number. I'll take some calls later in the show. But as promised, you know, and I'm the guy that brings you those exclusives that nobody brings you in New Jersey media, because you really don't see a podcast like this through other media apparatuses and as consistent as mine, and again, as reputable as mine. And, you know, this week is no exception because I continue bringing exclusives you want to hear from. And tonight, hey, it's my pleasure to welcome in the distinguished candidate for New Jersey State Assembly in the 18th Legislative District. Folks, let's welcome right now Ms. Angela Pham to Politically Direct. Angela, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Hi, Fernando. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, I appreciate it. Listen, thank you for taking so much, you know, taking time out of your busy day, campaigning and everything else are engaging in. So I appreciate that. How's the family? Everyone's vaccinated? Everyone healthy? What's going on?
Everyone's vaccinated. Thank goodness. My husband is a frontline worker, so, you know, it's a little scary in the beginning. You know, he's the guy dealing with the sickest of the sick. So We kind of had to really quarantine from all of our family, all of our loved ones, but thankfully we're getting back to normalcy now. Everyone's vaccinated, and we can taste that freedom, you know?
Well, we are hopefully getting back to some sense of normalcy. I know that that has caused quite a debate in New Jersey with the governor and what he announced this week, and we'll get to that later because I'm sure you have a lot to say about it as pertains to the reopening of the state. But again, folks, for our audience tonight, if you're not familiar, the 18th Legislative District consists of municipalities in Middlesex County, which include East Brunswick Township, Edison, Helmetta, Highland Park, Metuchen, South Plainfield, and South Rivers. So a very diverse district, to say the very least, I think along socioeconomic lines, and even ethnically, I think New Jersey is very, very unique state, to say the very least. But Angela, first and foremost, you know, I think the question on the minds of so many listening tonight is, why are you the best choice to represent the 18th Legislative District in the New Jersey State Assembly?
So I am not a politician. I'm just a stay-at-home mom, a former small business owner who is just really fired up at all of the things that are going wrong in our state, and I couldn't just sit back and be quiet anymore. I've got three boys at home that I need to go out there, and I need to make a better future for them if they are going to have any chance here in New Jersey. So that's really what pushed me to go out. You know, our budget's a mess. Our taxes are the highest in the country. Murphy's response to COVID was just completely unacceptable. Our numbers were the highest in the country for the last few months. And, you know, a third of our small businesses have closed within the last year. And I'm a doer. I'm somebody that just can't sit back and just take it. So I'm taking matters into my own hand. We have a pretty strong Republican ticket in the 18th district. It's myself, Melanie McCain-Mott. She is currently a councilwoman in South Plainfield, and she's, you know, super mom, got three kids, top real estate agent in her office. She just is a superwoman. I don't know how she does it all. And then on the Senate line, we have Vihal Patel. He's a veteran from the Army. Currently he's working as a firefighter, and he's just an all-around great guy, wants the best for our district, really cares about our constituents. So I feel like between the three of us, we're really diverse. We really care about people within our district, and because we're not really mixed up in the politics of things, we can keep our eyes on the prize, which is, you know, fixing our state rather than, you know, worrying about what promises have been made and, you know, who I got to pay back favors to or anything like that.
Well, let me ask you this and certainly it's great to have you on. And, you know, I'd like to give a chance to everybody on this program, regardless of what party it is and when they're running. And I've been interviewing for the last few months now, actually, on the show, assembly candidates from both sides of the aisle. And it's interesting because certainly one of the incumbents in the 18th district, as a matter of fact, I interviewed him on my Real Talk show on Eisen and J News not too long ago. And it's interesting because it just seems to me that it's a part of Middlesex County that, again, I don't want to say sounds completely blue, because where I live in Hudson County in the 31st, 32nd, 33rd, I mean, these are solid blue areas. I mean, these are not going to flip anytime soon. I mean, Thanos from the MCU could come in and snap his fingers, you know, like an Avengers Endgame, and it's not going to make a difference. I think Democrats have a solid grip on this area. But is that the same sort of consensus you're hearing in the 18th Legislative District? I mean, is it a district where, you know, Republicans really do have a chance during this election cycle?
So, as far as districts go in our kind of central Jersey area, our numbers are more favorable towards us versus other districts. Like, I know I have a few friends running in other districts, and they're looking at 13,000 vote gap or, you know, 11 or 12,000 vote gap, whereas we're kind of working with a 7,000 vote gap, which, mm-hmm. you know, is still a lot and it's going to be difficult to overcome. But I think if there was ever a year to do it, it would be this year. I think lines have been crossed. I feel like 2020 has been a year that has changed every single person. Nobody can deny that. And a lot of people are being left to think critically. They're, even my friends within my district who are blue aren't liking the things that are happening in our schools, aren't liking the mask mandates and the closures, and they're really starting to feel like the blue is leaning a little more communist than the Democratic Party that they knew and grew up with and, you know, have been a part of for so long.
Well, that's alarming. And, you know, when we hear about the way that the Democratic Party has swung so far left, I mean, I think that really, I think you make an interesting observation about, you know, districts in the state that that's representative of. And certainly, you know, I'm someone, and I really want to get your thoughts on this, Angela, because, you know, you talked before about the premise that, yes, we do have the highest property taxes in the country. Spending continues to be irresponsible. And it's always interesting because I get a lot of grief on social media and also because of what I do on my shows, this one and others, where I'm really harsh on the Democrats in the legislature. And a lot of people write to me privately and say, you know, Fernando, I mean, I get it. You're a center-right guy. You're a conservative guy. But, man, like, you do not let up. You're always so harsh and overly critical of Democrats in Trenton. And it just seems like you're never critical of Republicans and or conservatives. And my answer, Angela, and I remember speaking to other assembly candidates recently who are also Republicans and even Democrats too. My answer is always consistent. Hey, Republicans have been in the minority for 20 years now in the legislature. Yeah, we've had some Republican governors come and go. But the bottom line is the legislature is what creates the budget, you know, passes legislation, et cetera, et cetera. And Democrats have been in control of that for almost two decades. And when we see the state going very blue, adopting some very leftist ideologies and legislation, irresponsible spending, just crazy taxation, I'm sorry, I have to blame Democrats because they're the ones in control. Republicans are in the minority. You can't really blame Republicans. So when I say that to people, they tend to be quiet and say, oh, well, I didn't think of it that way. And my answer is always like, well, exactly. So, you know, give me a break here. You know, when Democrats have been running the legislature for 20 years, they deserve all the vitriol and scrutiny that they deserve. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. I mean, we unfortunately have the minority in the state, so we have little to no say. And the reality is, you know, Democrats have their fundamental beliefs and Republicans have their fundamental beliefs. And I am as fiscally conservative as they get. And it's just, it's not what, you know, us conservative, fiscally conservative Republicans do. We don't believe in big government. We don't believe in a lot of spending, and therefore we don't believe in these crazy taxes. And, you know, that's all I have to say to my constituents is if you don't like it, if you get that knot in the back of your throat when your property tax bill comes in, you know, vote. Get out there, vote, and vote for people who you know are going to make a change.
And that's important. And folks, if you're just joining us right now, it's 9:20 here on the East Coast on Blog Talk Radio. It's my pleasure to have on the show tonight Ms. Angela Pham, a candidate for the New Jersey State Assembly in the 18th Legislative District here tonight on Politically Direct. So I'll take some calls later in the show. Folks, if you want to call in, it once again, 818-572-8032 is our toll-free number, and it's brought to you by Insider NJ. Angela, you're running as a Republican, and, you know, it's a weird year, you know, historically, when there is a change in presidencies and there's a Democrat in the White House. Historically, that's a ripe opportunity for Republicans, not just to win a gubernatorial seat, but to win legislative seats. It just happens to work out that way. And we'll get to Governor Murphy in a minute here in the program. I really want to get your thoughts on him and his chances for reelection. But at the end of the day right now, it's, you know, Jersey's in a really interesting position as it pertains to the Republican Party. And I talk to a lot of people off the air and that reach out to me because of this show and my other media programs. And I just think there are pockets of the state that maybe are going through Trump fatigue. And that was, you know, for the last 4 years, that was a significant representation in the Republican Party, both nationally and even statewide. Do you think Republicans are some Republicans are going through Trump fatigue right now in the state of New Jersey?
Absolutely. I feel like Trump is a very, you know, he kind of separates people into two groups. You either love him or you hate him. There's really no in between. And I just feel like the Republican Party nationwide, but more locally in our state, is ready for a facelift. I mean, really, our whole government. It breaks my heart to see how divisive this country has become. And, you know, nobody's allowed to have opinions anymore. If you have a difference of opinions, we cannot be friends. You know, you can't be my neighbor. I will not support your business. And it's just become crazy. And I would love to take America back to the days when, you know, you and I might not agree, but we can coexist and we can get along and we can be polite with one another. Because at the end of the day, we are all Americans. We're all New Jerseyans, as corny as it may sound. And I just, you know, I would love for my kids to grow up in the America that you and I grew up in, because it's completely mm-hmm. different than the divisiveness that they're faced with nowadays.
No, listen, that's a fair observation, and I'm with you. Listen, as someone who's been suspended multiple times this year from Facebook, you know, I understand that oftentimes opinions create, you know, a backlash. I get that. And, you know, as someone who is a reasonable conservative, I mean, to some people who are very far left, I know this because I work in academia during the day, and, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm the reincarnation of Satan to a lot of my colleagues in academia because they're so far left. Yeah, and they're like, they're Marxists, basically. But so I understand the importance of civility, and I think that, listen, I think you really touched a nerve here, because you're pretty much telling us the reality that we're living in this time of tribalism politically. Forget about nationally, but even statewide in New Jersey. There are pockets of the state that are very conservative. There are pockets of the state identify as very liberal or blue or progressive or whatever the hell label you want to assign to it. And I think that divide isn't getting us anywhere, because at the end of the day, we're not working together, and it shows in the legislature, right? I mean, again, Democrats have an overwhelming majority. We're looking at numbers here, for example, you know, in the state Senate, the majority is 25-15 Democrat, and in the assembly, it's 52-28. So, I mean, these are big majorities that the Democrats have, and it just seems like even with majorities, they're not legislating responsibly. What concerns you the most right now about the direction the legislature is moving in? I know you talked about taxes and spending, but what else concerns you about the legislature right now?
There's a lot. A lot of the family issues, you know, they passed the bill about marijuana with minors and how police are not allowed to report marijuana use to parents with minors, which is, you know, a big deal. My kids aren't at that age yet, hopefully. And, you know, there has to be some accountability. And I just, the state kind of taking over parenting for us, between that and curriculums that they're passing in the school. I mean, after this last year of COVID and our kids being home for over a year now, I know personally, you know, my oldest, he used to read two grade levels above his current grade level, and now he's currently reading at grade level, and his teachers told me to be thankful because most kids are far behind. The focus really should be on getting our kids back where they need to be and not on social issues or, you know, replacing what parents should be doing around the kitchen table at night.
Well, that's alarming, right? Because as someone who works in education, and again, it's sort of different because I'm teaching adults, theoretically. They don't always act like adults in college, but, you know, that's sort of the premise. But you know, my heart goes out to teachers, so many teachers that I know throughout New Jersey in different school districts where, I mean, kids as young as 5 and 6 have been drastically affected by COVID and these restrictions because, let's be honest, I mean, you're a parent. You know, I don't have any kids that I know of, but, I mean, I'm familiar with children because of my godson and obviously friends of mine that have children. I mean, you talk about 5, 6, 7, those are the formative years for a kid, for a child. This is when you start learning sort of like the basic kind of motor skills, you know, right? The basic cognitive skills, reading, somewhat of writing, math. And when you've been home for a year in front of a computer, and sometimes the parents are not tech savvy, sometimes the parents will struggle themselves to, you know, get their kids to sit in front of a computer for Zoom. It's been absolutely, I think, debilitating for children. I mean, case in point, your scenario, you say you have 3 boys. What are the age disparities among them, and what did you see firsthand?
So I have an 11-year-old, a 9-year-old, and then my youngest is going to be 2 in June. So for my older two, you know, I'm really not envious of any of these teachers. These 4 teachers have the hardest job right now. You know, it's hard enough to get a 9-year-old to engage with you when they're sitting a foot in front of you, let alone through a computer screen in their home. Half the time they've got other tabs open and they're playing games or they're doing whatever, getting a snack out of the pantry because it's right there. So I'm really not envious of, you know, our teachers, and I really think that they're doing a great job. But things that I've noticed in my kids, definitely, you know, cognitively between, you know, their reading and their math, they're definitely not at the level that they used to be. Socially is a big thing. They've lost a lot of social skill. I try to maintain play dates and things now that, you know, people are regaining comfort, but, you know, it's hard to regain the loss of a year, the loss of a year in maturity and, you know, mental growth, physical growth, social growth. It's hard, you know. My oldest is used to playing basketball, and he plays by himself in, you know, the front yard, but he just rejoined the team, and to see how much his skills have deteriorated, you know, it's kind of sad, and he was disappointed too. So he's become obsessive again with his drills and all that. So I think all the kids are facing struggles. My little 2-year-old, I tell everyone, I think he's going to be the most socially awkward 2-year-old kid when he grows up, because he's just not used to being around anyone or talking to anyone or interacting. And it really makes me sad, but I'm hoping we get back to normalcy sooner rather than later.
Well, speaking of normalcy, and obviously this week, Governor Murphy announced a rollback of a lot of the restrictions that he implemented via executive order. You know, listen, I've been as critical about Governor Murphy with this for some months now. You know, a year ago at this time, Angela, I mean, listen, I can't be a hypocrite here and all of a sudden just engage in manufactured outrage, at least from my end. But, you know, a year ago at this time, you know, we didn't know what we know now about the virus. Certainly, you know, vaccine rollouts were not what we're seeing, even though I'm still skeptical about vaccines and I'm not an anti-vaxxer, so chill out. I'm not trying to say anything. I'm not trying to engage in conspiracy theories, but, you know, I'm not a big fan of needles, so if I can put it off until getting it, fine, I'll hold off on it. But the point is that, you know, a year ago at this time, though, Angela, you know, a lot of people in a lot of pockets of the state kind of looked at Governor Murphy and said, well, you know, this is something we've never experienced before. He's trying to do the best he can, and I can sort of rationalize that mindset. But as 2020 rolled along, we started seeing that in other states that took on a regional approach to the virus and not sort of a one-size-fits-all approach like Governor Murphy and Governor Cuomo across the river in New York, I think we saw the devastating results. And I think that's where a lot of the anger towards Governor Murphy, I think, is directed at, because of now it's a year plus, and only now we're, you know, he's looking to reopen the state shortly before Memorial Day, coincidentally in an election year where, you know, historically a Democrat doesn't win in New Jersey as governor for a second term. And that hasn't happened since before our time, since the days of Brendan Byrne. I mean, that's a long time ago in New Jersey politics. So it seems like the governor has got a lot of backlash about these restrictions. He's reopening the state now. You know, what have you liked and what have you not liked about what Governor Murphy has done with COVID?
I completely agree with you. This time last year, I think we were all scared. Nobody knew what was going on. No one knew what to expect. But then it reached a point kind of, I think, towards the end of the summer, really beginning of fall, when we were seeing numbers and percentages that made us feel a little bit more comfortable, like, okay, I'm probably being a little more risky getting in my car and driving to the grocery store than, you know, actually walking around the grocery store. And as I stated before, my husband is a frontline worker. Like, nobody's denying that COVID is real, and you know, it really, the world hard, and we lost a lot of people unnecessarily. But you know, moving on from that, there are other importances other than just COVID that, you know, at a certain point when other states were opening up to save their businesses, to, you know, reopen elective surgeries because people have been putting things off that were causing, you know, bigger medical issues, reopening schools for, you know, the mental health of their children. There were a lot of bigger issues that were kind of just swept under the rug because it became a numbers game. And he would sit there in his briefing every single morning and run through the numbers, but, you know, every other number was being ignored. Nobody talked about how many businesses were closed that day. Nobody talked about, you know, how many young children we lost because, you know, they couldn't handle being locked up in their room all day facing a screen. So, you know, we definitely reached a point where if he leaned to open up, state would have responded. And I feel like we paid a big price for his lack of leadership.
Wow. Okay. I mean, those are strong words there, and I'm with you. And listen, I don't disagree with anything you just said. I think you made exceptional points here in really highlighting a lot of the frustration I think that people have, Angela, about the way the governor has managed this virus. And you know, it breaks my heart, as I'm sure it does for you, seeing hundreds, if maybe not thousands, of small businesses going under that we'll never see again. You know, case in point up here in Hudson County where I live. I mean, there are plenty of restaurants that have been staples of the community for years, if not decades, and we saw them go under. We started seeing other small businesses just, you know, going into bankruptcy because either they couldn't get access to PPP loans with the federal government, and at times, you know, they couldn't get people back to work. Right. I mean, isn't that the challenge now? Aren't we seeing this in New York City, for example, even here in New Jersey, where, you know, for people that have been fortunate to collect unemployment, in many instances, it's not worth it to them to go back to work. They seem to be better off, you know, collecting unemployment, maybe working from home, off the books, whatever, as opposed to businesses that are reopening. And I just saw something today on NJ.com, which blew my mind. There are some restaurants down the shore that are willing to hire people at $15 an hour. That's not something you see in service. In hospitality, and I know this because I worked in it during grad school. I bartended, I hosted. So these aren't figures you see all the time. And even then, people don't seem to be animated enough to go back to work. Again, I'm not trying to paint with a broad brush, but you know what I'm saying, right?
I know exactly what you're saying. Like I said earlier, many moons ago, I used to be a small business owner within New Jersey. I actually owned a little pizzeria, so I know all about, you know, payroll and, you know, paying, serving staff and things of that nature. And I can tell you right now, we would have never kept our doors open if I had to pay my staff $15 an hour. And $15 an hour, Fernando, if you do the math, 15 and you work, you know, a full time, which is 40 hours a week, you'll still make more on unemployment. And that's an issue. That's a big problem because, you know, everywhere I'm going nowadays, I'm seeing now hiring signs, and they're not going away. The jobs just aren't being filled, and, you know, this is going to be a tough one to come back from for our economy, for sure. I mean,
it certainly is, and I think now as it's getting warmer, it's May, once again, you know, the governor – to no one's surprise after Governor Cuomo indicate he'll be lifting restrictions this weekend, you know, sure enough, Phil Murphy followed right suit, right? It seemed like, okay, you do it, I do it. And, you know, now by May 19th, it seems that establishments, restaurants, see, I always find this to be funny. And again, I don't, my PhD isn't in medicine or anything in the natural sciences, but I, you know, it's interesting when I hear people from the Department of Health giving the governor, you know, advice or guidance about, yes, you know what, bar seating will resume at bars, which is great. I think people want to get back to that, especially as the warm weather is here. People want to go day drinking, whatever. But somehow the restaurants will be back at full capacity, but you still have to be 6 feet apart. And so that doesn't really mean the establishment is 100% open again. So it just seems like, make a decision, DOH. Either we're lifting restrictions, and I get it, you still want people to be healthy and safe, but either lift restrictions or don't. Don't sort of be wishy-washy about it. And I think that is what rubs people the wrong way now, a year plus into this, about the governor and about the Department of Health. Is that fair to say right now?
100%. There are so many contradictions. I can go around the corner to the local mom and pop pizzeria and sit 6 feet apart from somebody and eat, and that's okay. But my kids can't sit 6 feet apart at school and have lunch at their desk in order to complete a full day of school. I mean, where's the logic in that? But, you know,
it's frustrating.
That's just
it's frustrating.
The administration from the beginning, it's just been full of contradictions, the way that they've approached this COVID. First, in the beginning, they were saying, oh, unless you're wearing an N95, it's not going to work. Now, we're all wearing these, you know, paper-thin fabric masks that, you know, they help. There's no denying that masks help, but they're really not saving people the way that they're making it seem. So, I don't know. I remember Murphy saying that we should wear masks when we're outside running and riding our bikes, and people wear masks in their cars. I've heard a few incidents of people passing out and getting into really bad accidents wearing masks in their vehicles.
Yeah, just, that doesn't make any sense. It seems like really – and it's interesting because – and I really don't want to get overly political about a virus, but it's always interesting because, like, I get a lot of grief for this too when I say this on my media shows. You know, some Democrats in New Jersey are all about science, but when it suits them, right? When it comes to – you know, climate hysteria, when it comes to climate change, or when it comes to talking about biology, it seems like for some reason, some Democrats, especially far left ones in the legislature, you know, maybe they failed high school biology, right? Because they think that there's more than two genders when there isn't. Or for some reason, they're buying into the hysteria about climate. You know, oh, well, you know, that's, you know, oh, that's science, but this is science. And it's like, make a decision. Either you believe in science or you don't. It's almost like, you know, you know. I mean, I hate to use this analogy, but like if you're gonna go on a first date and you're going as a guy and you're going out with a really really hot girl, either you're paying for the check and gonna make it a date and be the gentleman or not. Like there's no wishy washy of like, oh well, do you want to go? You want to split the check? No. Like either you believe in something or you don't. And it just seems like the left in this state is sort of a reflection of the country right now, where there are a lot of people in the Democratic Party that aren't being consistent about science, and it's killing economies, it's killing jobs, and to be honest, it's also killing people. And I think that's what really concerns people like me, and I'm sure you and others as well.
Absolutely. I mean, like I stated before, I think, you know, this last year has made everybody slow down, and that has really forced people to really critically think what's being told to them through the media, what they're being told is okay, and then, you know, a month later is being told that it's not okay, and, you know, kind of flip-flopping back and forth. And that's why I really feel like this is our year for the Republican Party in New Jersey. I feel like a lot of people are fed up. A lot of people have seen the light. A lot of people are ready for a change. And we have really, really strong candidates throughout the state who are ready, willing, and able to do so.
And that's encouraging, I think, for sure. And folks, if you're just joining us again here live, it's 9:40 on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. It's my pleasure to talk with tonight Legislative District 18 Assembly candidate, Ms. Angela Pham, here on Politically Direct. Angela, let's get back to the 18th District here. Again, we talked about, obviously, the impact of COVID. What have you seen from talking to people? And obviously, this year is very different than it was last year in terms of campaign. You couldn't go door to door. You can't be talking to people per se. Now, you know, obviously, it's a lot more possible, vaccine rollouts. I think campaigning will sort of resume the sense of normalcy. You might be able to go to carnivals or town fairs or barbecues where you get to meet your future constituents and everything else. What are you hearing from people that you talk to in the 18th Legislative District about? Again, we all know COVID and vaccine rollouts obviously are probably at the top of the list, and that's what concerns people, and rightfully so. But what other things are you hearing from people you're talking to that really take precedence? Is it infrastructure? Is it the school district? Is it spending in the municipalities? Like, what are you hearing right now?
It's all of the above, to be honest with you. It depends who it is. It depends what the function is. A lot of people are concerned about infrastructure, especially with the taxes that we pay. It's hard to pay the taxes that we pay and then have to pay for, you know, on average 2 to 3 new tires a year due to our potholes throughout the state. You know, traffic is out of control because, you know, we don't have proper road systems and things like that. So that's a major issue for a lot of people. Murphy just came out with his new budget, which is really
crazy.
Beautiful.
Crazy.
Okay. Yeah.
It's crazy.
I think it's
crazy.
$46.8 billion. I mean, apparently New Jerseyans are just made of money. We have it coming out of our ears. So, and then he said that would be our new budget, but don't worry, he's not going to increase taxes. He's going to instead take out a loan from the government that we're going to have to pay back with interest. And how do you think we're going to pay that back? We're not going to increase taxes on an election year, but guess what's going to happen the following year if he wins? So, you know, people are starting to see beyond the false promises. And then more locally within our district, there's kind of some issues going on within Edison. Some of the incumbents there are under review by the state attorney general for, you know, racist flyers that kind of went out. And in today's climate, that just doesn't fly. Right, left, doesn't matter who you are, nobody stands for that anymore. So those are all major issues. Backing the blue, we have amazing officers within our district who work hard, and a lot of them grew up and were Democrats up until recently. And I can't tell you how many tell me I just can no longer support a party that doesn't appreciate what I do, doesn't appreciate the fact that I put my life on the line every single day to serve and protect. And instead they think a social worker could come in and do my job better, you know? So
yeah, you know, it's
those are some of the issues.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because I know that was one of the things I really didn't sit well with me last year about COVID and about some of the, sort of the hypocrisy about gatherings and being out and about. And I nailed the governor on this last year when, you know, and maybe, you know, and again, I personalized it because I know that at this time last year, on May 18th, my grandmother of 101 years old passed away. And certainly because of the circumstances, you know, the funeral services were only immediate family. And, you know, in the meantime, people couldn't have weddings, people couldn't have baptisms, bar mitzvahs, whatever. You know, even funeral masses. But meanwhile, you know, the governor wants to acquiesce to a Marxist organization. And folks, for everyone tuning in here, let me be very clear, because I don't want someone to take this and take it out of context, or, you know, whatever, take the audio and then misinterpret it. The bottom line is, I can care about Black lives. I can care about the importance of issues that matter to people of color. I can do that without subscribing to the radical views of the movement itself, which is Black Lives Matter. Like, the co-founders are Marxists. They've admitted it. This is not speculation, folks. This is not conjecture. This is not me, you know, fabricating something. Look it up. It's easy to find. And it seems like, you know, the governor was, had no problem marching in Linden with Black Lives Matter. Yeah, everyone's wearing a mask. Ooh, okay. Yeah, so much for social distancing. And I get it. It was a volatile time, but it's still, it's just, it was a bad optic for the governor. You're lecturing people, hey, you shouldn't be out. You shouldn't be at barbecues at people's homes, or you shouldn't be at gyms, which, as we all know, if you go to the gym and you're living a healthy lifestyle, your chances of catching COVID are less. Whatever. That didn't matter to him or the DOH. But there's the governor marching with Black Lives Matter, or there's Black Lives Matter movements, rallies all over the state. And it seems like, you know, I mean, I kind of put some blame on the governor, but I think I also put blame on the atrocious liberal media in New Jersey. Angela, case in point, NJ.com, the Star Ledger. I mean, I know this will get me in trouble, but Insider NJ, you know, the editor-in-chief didn't do anything. He didn't write anything criticizing BLM, which I was the only one on New Jersey media doing anything about it, talking about it. And I got a lot of vitriol. It just seems like the governor, that was a bad optic when it comes to the virus. And it's like, you can be together for this, but you can't be together for that. I think that set a really bad visual for people, Angela.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We can get together to, you know, not New Jersey, but New York, to riot and to, you know, destroy property and things like that. But we can't get together. We can't assemble in our local church and pray. You know, that's a bad optic. Especially people really, really suffered this last year. For example, your grandmother's funeral that you were unable to attend. I know I have personal family members who also passed away this last year that I was unable to be there for, weddings that were postponed, special occasions that were canceled. My son's first birthday, is as small and minuscule of a thing as it is, you know, he's going to be my last one, and I kind of wanted to do something special for him, and that was taken away from me. So to be unable to do those things because we're concerned about the safety and well-being of our neighbors, and then to see, you know, Murphy parading around really, really is a bad optic, you know?
No, it really was. It really was. And I think also to compound the problem, I think it was also this very negative climate about law enforcement. And listen, I worked in the criminal justice system for 10 years before transitioning to higher education and now journalism too at the same time simultaneously. But I know firsthand the challenges that we face working in government, law enforcement. I see it. I worked in jails. I understand. But it just seems like there are pockets or factions in the legislature, Angela, especially in the Democratic Party, that seem to be so quick to, you know, we have to cater or coddle certain left-wing groups in this state, whether it be people who want to defund the police or, you know, here's another issue that, again, the state assembly and the state senate, you know, obviously came under some fire for our audience, maybe they're not aware, this past Saturday, right, May 1st, New Jersey became the latest state in the country to grant driver's licenses to illegals. And that was something that was pretty much rammed through the legislature. You know, these left-wing groups pressured the state assembly and the state senate. Clearly, the governor, who's very leftist, had no problem signing this bill into law. And listen, I'm the son of immigrants, okay? Newsflash, you know, my mom left communism in Cuba. My father left bad economy in Colombia. And they came here for a better life. They came here legally, did it the right way, whatever. And, you know, I understand the struggle of immigrants. I'm not oblivious, but Angela, it seems like this legislature is more than willing to just sort of coddle illegals and citizens, homeowners, and taxpayers. No, forget about them. They don't matter. That's the optic I see.
Fernando, when that bill was passed, I cannot explain to you how badly my blood was boiling. I am also the daughter of immigrants. My parents immigrated here because of religious persecution, and they came here with nothing to their name, didn't
from
speak
where?
The language. Looked,
from where? I'm
from
curious.
Egypt.
Okay,
Egypt.
Very nice, very nice, very nice, okay.
Yeah. So
you know, they work 2 to 3 jobs at a time. They learn the language. They, you know, took out a mortgage and bought their first home. And they are truly the epitome of the American dream. They did it legally. They did it the right way. They waited till it was their turn to come here. And, you know, they're upstanding citizens, if I do say so myself. But all jokes aside, this is just border right now is beyond unacceptable. This is just the Democrats lining their pockets with voters. And that's all it's coming down to, because that's, you know, 2,000 people are crossing the border every single day. They're going to say, oh, yeah, that guy is the one that got me into this country. That's the party I'm going to stick with. That's the party I'm going to vote for, regardless of, you know, if they legitimize themselves, they get good jobs, they become educated. You know, this is kind of how they indoctrinate people to join their party and to stay lifelong members in their party, because they give them, you know, a handout or a way in or whatever it is. And people don't forget that. And it's a big problem that we're facing. And if we can't, that issue at the border, or, you know, illegals within our state now able to get driver's licenses, which means they can head to a polling place with their driver's license, you know, we're going to be in serious trouble.
Oh, no, I agree with you. Listen, and it's really interesting, because if somehow activist groups were doing studies and all of a sudden illegal immigrants were going to vote Republicans in big numbers, I'll tell you something. Democrats would want a wall built as high as the Freedom Tower, okay? That's how quick Democrats would be quick to correct this, okay? But it just benefits them, and they have no problem enabling it. And, you know, it's a really sad testament about how the legislature just – does things against their own self-interest, and against the best interest of taxpayers, to say the least. Angela, let me ask you this, because again, we talked about the 18th, we talked about issues that are really relevant there. You know, you mentioned something about infrastructure. Are we talking about just sort of like deficient bridges? Are we talking about like really atrocious roads? Are we talking about maybe not the fact that because New Jersey is more densely populated and there's more congestion, are we talking about maybe not enough bike lanes in these municipalities? Like, what about infrastructure specifically doesn't sit well with you? Because, again, you're right to bring it up, and I'm with you, and I agree with you. But what specifically for our audience can you sort of articulate for us here that really, I think, needs the most attention, like, right away?
I mean, all of the above really are issues. But, I mean, the things that need attention right away in my district locally, probably – 287, you better pray Hail Mary before you get on 287. Otherwise, you're going to be on the side of the road with a flat tire. I mean, it's completely been torn apart. The traffic there is consistently out of control. There's more than enough room to expand the roadway, and nothing's being done. It's being completely ignored. Bridges in our district are literally crumbling, pieces falling off, completely unsafe, things that should have been redone, you know, 10 to 20 years ago that are still sitting there unrepaired. It's just the whole infrastructure within the state is just completely unacceptable. I mean, I grew up down in Florida. My parents live in a similar size home to my home, and they pay a fraction of what I pay, not to mention they pay no state income tax. And roads, granted, they don't have the weather we have, they don't have a lot of the issues that we have, but roads there are pristine. Bridges there are pristine. If they get the inkling that some roadway is going to start to get congested, there's new construction area, they go above and beyond, expanding roadways, adding new lanes. It's a completely different world. And I feel like, in general, New Jersey needs to kind of look at the good attributes from other states and just take notes.
No, listen, absolutely. I'm with you. And I think that when we look at other states, the way they're governed, I mean, listen, case in point, look in Texas and look at Florida. You know, Governors Greg Abbott and Ron DeSantis collectively, I mean, look at the way they've governed those states during COVID and now in reopening their states, and they're doing much better. And I understand that people here in New Jersey that defend Phil Murphy or Democrats in the legislature are just going to say, well, Fernando, you know, we're talking about apples and oranges here. We're talking about a state like New Jersey that's densely populated as opposed to states that are much more spacious, geographic-wise, like Texas and Florida. But the point is, I would argue, that it's about having a regional approach to COVID, not a one-size-fits-all, which is what Phil Murphy and, again, Andrew Cuomo and also, you know, Neil Lamont in Connecticut, the three states that border each other, have been doing. And, again, we've seen the catastrophe that it's produced. I mean, I think it's as simple as that. I don't think people can really refute that, I mean, unless they're not being objective. Let me ask you this, though, Andrew, because, again, you're running in the, you know, obviously coming up on primary day. Do you have any opponents right now, or are you the, for example, the county, on the county line, or are you on the organizational line right now?
Yeah, we are on the organizational line. We have no Republican opponents. The Democrats running in our district do have a primary race. They are, they do have other people running in their party, so that should be interesting to see how that pans out. But right now, we're running, nobody's running against us, thankfully.
Okay. Okay, so based on that answer, then it's sort of, I have to ask the following. Obviously, the governor is going to have an opponent. We're not going to know until primary day. It seems, according to some internal polling that I've that's been shared with me, with people that I talked to that are operatives, there's a good chance, percentage-wise, and just because I think of fundraising and everything else, and also because of endorsements from county organizations, that former Assemblyman Jack Cittarelli, most likely, again, I'm not trying to piss off anyone listening tonight that working on the campaigns, because I know they listen, but I have to be fair here. There's a good chance, possibly, that Jack Cittarelli could be the nominee. He'll be at the top of the ticket. How do you look at Jack's chances if he's indeed the nominee, or is there someone else in the field that you think, hey, this is the person that's probably going to give Governor Murphy a run for his money, if not outright beat him, coming up in November?
You know, my personal opinion of who I like the best really doesn't matter. It really has to be a larger picture of who's the most electable and who has the highest percentage to win, to beat Murphy. That's the goal in all this, isn't to get the guy that I like and then he loses and then I'm stuck with, you know, Murphy again. But that being said, I feel like Jack is a great candidate. He's not extreme in any of his beliefs, so I really think he will pull a lot of unaffiliated votes. You know, again, those people who are unaffiliated, who are frustrated with how the last year has panned out. He's a likable guy. He's done great things for the party, and I really feel like he has a very good chance to beat Murphy this go-around.
Well, fair enough. And, you know, again, it's interesting, you know, you mentioned the dynamics about voting and, you know, some numbers that, I mean, listen, 4 years ago, I think we can make the case that Kim Godano faced a really steep challenge because I think the state of New Jersey was experiencing Chris Christie fatigue. And despite the fact that Phil Murphy had an enormous amount of money in terms of fundraising advantage over Kim Godano, the lieutenant governor, the margin was only, again, Phil Murphy won by getting 1.2 million votes, and Kim Godano got, you know, a little under 900,000, around 899,000 and change. So pretty much, you know, the Republican lost by 300,000 votes. But here's the number that should really alarm us. 3.5 million independents stayed home. Now, I can't, you know, there's no algorithm, there's no quantitative evidence I can produce that says, well, you know, if they all voted Republican, guess what? We'd have a Republican governor. But 3.5 million people stayed home. I would argue that for Republicans at the top of the ticket, and I think for Republicans down the line, legislatively, you know, it's important to reach out to independents because they're going to decide the election, right? Because right now, Democrats outnumber Republicans registration-wise. I saw an article on Insider this week that said that Republicans, I think the Republican Party made some strides in registering more Republicans than Democrats in the last calendar year, but it still isn't, you know, it's not enough to chip. It's not significant enough to chip into that, you know, 1.5 million disadvantage that they have. But yeah, listen, something to get registrations. But it just seems like independents have to have a reason to want to vote at the top of the ticket. And I would argue that independents need a reason to want to vote for you and your ticket, right? If you're going to win, especially in such a blue state. Is that fair also to say?
Absolutely. I mean, I know personally within our district, if you kind of look town by town, the independents pretty much match up to the numbers of the Dems that we have within our district. So, you know, in order for us to win, it really has to be a culmination of three things. We really have to get registered Republicans fired up enough to get out and vote. Nobody can stay home. We don't have that luxury. We need a change. We really need, and we're planning on going door to door and reaching out to as many unaffiliated as we can, hear them out, have conversations, really get to know our constituents, and then, you know, pray that the Dems feel comfortable that they're living in a blue state and they just don't feel the need to show up to polls that day. If we can get those three things to happen, we've got a real shot.
I'm with you. I totally agree. And I think that, again, Republicans just cannot have this happen again. I mean, you know, independents are, again, the largest voting bloc in the state. And again, I'm an independent. And, you know, at the end of the day, I want people that are fiscal conservatives like me. I want those people in office. And it just seems like there's a lot of districts in the state. And I think some can make the argument that in the 18th, the Democrats that run the district, because again, they're the incumbents, maybe are poster children for sort of like those lifelong politicians that have been there for too long. And maybe that's the perception that's out there. Are you hearing the same thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What I've been telling people I speak to, and what I'll say to everyone in any district, is if you want to learn about your legislative members that are currently in office, just go and look at their voting history, because it tells a whole story. And, you know, we have so many resources at our hands. We just really need to encourage people and get them to understand that their vote matters and that they can really make a change. And they really need to, you know, invest a little bit of time to knowing who they're voting for, who they're putting in office, where their beliefs align with theirs, and who would make the biggest change and difference in their own personal life.
You know what? That's well said. That's well said, Angela. And I think that, you know, in an election year, we are looking at choices. And I would argue that that is what New Jerseyans, I think, are coming to grips with, especially a year of being home, in many instances staying home for a long period of time, getting to some sense of normalcy this year. And I think that that's what people are probably looking at, where they're going to look at their ballots, especially now on June 8th, where the governor conveniently now is saying that you can go vote in person as long as you follow certain safety protocols, where last November you couldn't do that. And we all know how some of us feel about vote by mail. We all know that it is ripe. It's as ripe as an avocado for fraud. Okay, it's as simple as that. So, folks, it's 10 o'clock here on the East Coast here on Block Talk Radio. I see some people on hold here. Angela, you want to take some calls here on the show here tonight?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Again, folks, please be respectful. Just very briefly, just tell me your name, where you're calling from, and very quickly, if you have a question or comment for me or for Ms. Angela Pham, candidate for assembly in the 18th Legislative District, I want to hear it. So let's go to 908 right now here. Again, what's your name, what you calling from, and what do you got for us tonight here? 908, what's up? Welcome to Politically Direct. How are you?
Hi, this is such a great show. Thank you for having me. Jessica from East Brunswick, and I just want to ask Angela, what does she plan on doing about the education, the sex education being pushed right now?
Jessica, thank you for the call. God bless you. Stay healthy. And I appreciate being a fan of the show. Please tell more people about it, okay?
Okay. Will do.
Okay, thank you. Angela, what do you have to say about Jessica's great question tonight?
I feel like everybody needs choices in life. You know, I understand that we live in a blue state, and I understand that they're trying to push their agenda down to the most little of children. And, you know, we're going to have a hard time reversing whatever's already come down the line. But, you know, as a parent, I'm not comfortable with my little two-year-old who will be in kindergarten in a few years being told, oh, you know, I know you think you're a boy, but you might not actually be a boy, and that's okay. You know, I want him to learn the ABCs. I want him to learn 1, 2, 3s and how to read. Like I stated earlier, I feel like our state really needs to focus on, you know, core education, you know, math, reading, history, science, and leave these social and, you know, parental issues to the parents. If my school district wants to teach, you know, sex education or, you know, LGBTQ beliefs to kids within the school, I would like the option, and I feel like all parents should have the option to choose whether their kids can opt in or opt out. And I'll just leave it at that.
Angela, well said, and I'm with you. I'm someone that, you know, I I'm a supporter of the LGBT community. I have many different organizations come on this show and other shows to talk with me. You know, I can support LGBT groups and support their pursuit of equality. I get all that. But at the same time, I don't have to acquiesce to the madness of, you know, talking about trans issues to first graders. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to subscribe to that. I think, you know, there are more important things to learn about in elementary school than, you know, curriculum saying that there are more than two genders. Like, Jesus Christ, like, did people fail high school biology in Trenton? I mean, do we high school biology? I mean, my God.
I completely agree. And, you know, I'm a strong Christian. I really don't hide that. I feel like it defines a lot of who I am. And, you know, I love everyone. And I feel like none of us are perfect. We all have, like, our quirks and our whatever. And I have lots of friends who are within the LGBTQ community. And, you know, I offer a lot of support to them. But I feel like, you know, there are just certain conversations that should be left for parents. And if some parents don't want to have those conversations with the kids and they want to let the school teach them whatever they want to teach them, that should be their prerogative. But it should also be my prerogative to, you know, want to teach my kids whatever it is I want to teach them.
I'm with you. I think it's commonsensical. I think it's rational. And I think it's just something that's pragmatic, and especially in today's times where, you know, kids being out of school for a year, they need the classroom again. They need to be physically in a classroom interacting with children their own ages. And I'm sorry not to say that I'm not being intolerant when I say this, but there's curriculum that's more that takes precedent right now for our kids to make sure that cognitively they're not falling behind. So I'm with you on that. Angela, before I let you go, number one, I want to thank you for your time tonight. You've been an outstanding guest. I know you've had a long day. Shout out to Angela's husband, who I'm sure has been with the kids and has been patiently waiting for you to be done. So shout out to him, my man. Thank you for, you know, allowing me to interview your lovely wife here tonight, who's running for assembly, and certainly for taking the time to, you know, allow her to be on the air tonight without any interruptions. I know that can be hard for parents and for their, especially if you have small children. So again, Angela, I want to thank you for your time. I really appreciate you coming on this show, believing in Politically Direct, believing in me and my media brand. And I'll give you the floor, young lady. I'll give you the last word. What makes Angela Pham the best choice to represent the 18th Legislative District in 2021?
Honestly, I'm a mom. I care. I care about my friends. I care about my neighbors. I care about, you know, if I'm in the assembly, I care about my constituents. I really have no other priority other than serving them. And, you know, that I'll just leave it at that. I think that in and of itself, you know, says a lot. And with that being said, I also want to thank you for having me on, Fernando. You are an amazing resource to us New Jerseyans who don't have very much choices when it comes to wanting to hear not extreme left media. So I thank you for everything that you do. And
thank you.
Thank you again for having me on.
Well, Angela, that's very kind of you. And again, I have to keep up the good fight. We got a lot of evil out there. NJ.com, the Star Ledger, even some people within Insider NJ who I don't like, and I'm sure they hate me too, but I'll keep on fighting. You keep doing the same. Good luck campaigning. And, you know, we'll have you on later on this summer. Maybe, you know, have you back on, get an update about how the campaign's going, you know, obviously everything that's going on in this election year in New Jersey. But again, thank you for your time tonight. And certainly please tell everyone you know how much of a fan you are of Politically Direct right here with InsiderNJ.com on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you so much, Angela.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great night. All right, folks, 1010 here on the East Coast. What a great show tonight here with Assembly candidate Angela Pham. Running in the 18th legislative district, I have to say, really, again, you know, really, really impressive interview tonight, an impressive candidate. You can tell, folks, just by talking to her for 5 minutes, she knows what she's talking about. She's invested in this campaign. She's someone who cares about what she's trying to accomplish here. It's difficult, you know. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, folks. You know, New Jersey's becoming much bluer. There are districts, especially in Central and South Jersey, that have become blue or have remained steady blue. But with candidates like Angela running along with her ticket, they're going to give, obviously, without a doubt, they're going to give those Democrats in the 18th legislative district a run for their money. It's as simple as that. It's a very winnable race, without question. It's a year where people, I think, are upset with the establishment. You know, as I said before, you know, Democrats have run the legislature for 20 years. Okay, they have big majorities right now. You know, 25-15 in the state Senate, 52-28 in the state assembly. You know, if you can shave away, you know, kind of pick away at this majority, you know, win seats here and there, you know, little by little. You can't flip the legislature in one cycle, but you can certainly start trying to chip away at the advantage that Democrats have. And again, in the 18th, you know, it's a winnable race for Republicans. It's really going to come down to independents figuring out what they want here. You know, do they want more years of Democrats in the legislature, raising taxes, spending irresponsibly, you know, coddling illegals, you know, coddling, you know, left-wing groups like Black Lives Matter instead of defending law enforcement. You know, I mean, is that what you want, folks? I mean, those are the choices this year. And I'm not trying to sound bombastic. I'm not trying to sound hyperbolic here, but those are the choices that people have. And as I mentioned again during the show, we did read this week that Republicans made some strides and some gains in registering more Republicans this past year than Democrats. That's great. It's still, you know, a big disadvantage. You know, there's approximately a million plus more Democrats registered than Republicans. So, again, Republicans have that disadvantage. But, again, we're talking about 3+ million independents, and they're the ones that decide elections. They're the ones that are going to say, you know what, do we want the status quo that keeps raising property taxes, that keeps spending money irresponsibly? Like, you know, Democrats, especially the liberal ones in Trenton, think we print money for some reason. You know, that we're like the U.S. Treasury in Washington, you know, the freaking Federal Reserve and printing money. You know, is that what we want, or do we want just better leadership or better representation? Folks, that's up to you. You got to make a decision what you want in New Jersey. You know, people moving out and people, you know, are upset about New Jersey. You know, you have a chance coming up on primary day and then on election day in November to make a choice. And, you know, I'm hoping that people choose wisely. You know, we can't afford, figuratively and literally, the path we're on in New Jersey. It's as simple as that. You know, a lot of liberals and progressives think that, you know, hey, money grows on trees and that, you know, this can be free, this. Folks, there's nothing free, okay? It's whenever you hear about a free service or free this in New Jersey, folks, it's taxpayer funded, okay? You know, so again, you know, I'm not trying to turn this into an economics course, but you don't need a PhD in economics to know this. But somehow I think that gets lost on many legislators in Trenton. So, again, great interview with Angela Pham. And, folks, you know, certainly if you're just tuning in right now and you missed any part of it, don't sweat it. you can always you can listen, right? Probably in about maybe the bottom of the hour at 10:30 Eastern time, you can go to www.insidernj.com/podcast. That's plural, podcast. And you can listen to tonight's episode in its entirety as well as the other ones in previous weeks. And I do urge you to do so. So again, folks, that's our show for this week here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, you can write to the show's inbox, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. I will be updating that page this weekend, folks, so please be patient. You can go check out my own personal Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. You'll get plenty of laughs too with my Instagram stories, tons of new followers and likes, so check that out. Also, folks, hit me up on Twitter at NoFilterUribe. That's at NoFilterURIBE. And for all you Facebook subscribers, please go to Politically Direct on Facebook. Like it. Again, Politically Direct with Fernando Uribe. Like it, of course. Share it on your wall. And, of course, tell all your friends to do the same. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, to check out Insider NJ on a daily basis because it's the best journalism in the state of New Jersey. No one does it better, folks, than Insider NJ. Again, once you go on the website, www.insidernj.com, you'll see the subscribe button upper right-hand corner. And guess what? You'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. You'll see all the great columns from the Insider NJ team that I'm so proud to be a part of. Again, special thank you to the Graham family, to Mike Graham, who cuts my check, which is nice. So thank you, Mike. To my boss, Pete Onelia, appreciate your support. And again, folks, 3 years in counting here, three awards in counting for Politically Direct. So without their support, this show wouldn't be possible. And when it debuted in January of 2018, I didn't know what to make of it. I wasn't sure how successful it would be. I knew it would be dependent on you, my loyal listening audience. And sure enough, you've come through for me as I continue to come through for you. So again, folks, www.insidernj.com. Make sure you like Insider NJ on Facebook. Also follow him on Twitter. And remember, start and end your day with Insider NJ. All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, hope you had a wonderful week. Again, great interview tonight with a state assembly candidate out of the 18th Legislative District, Angela Pham, on the show tonight. Certainly a great conversation. And again, ladies and gentlemen, as the weather's getting a little bit warmer, we're inching our way a little bit back to normalcy. It should have happened sooner, but, you know, I'm not the governor, so what do I know? But in any event, folks, do me a favor. Make sure that you tune in every single week here. Again, be at www.insidernj.com/podcast. Share it on your social media. Make sure you download the episodes. You can listen to them anywhere at any time from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. All right, folks, again, have a wonderful weekend. Please party responsibly. Again, be careful. Take an Uber or Lyft anywhere if you need to. Again, if you need to get vaccinated, you know, please consider doing so if that's what you want to do. And certainly stay healthy, folks. Again, keep wearing your masks. Please practice responsible social distancing. Take care of your neighbors. Look after, especially your elderly neighbors. Make sure that they're okay. And again, folks, I appreciate you all more than you'll ever realize here, because without you, this show wouldn't be possible. And always remember, it's real, it's here. It's the three-time award-winning Politically Direct. Good night. Metuchen, New Jersey. I got some friends out there in Metuchen who love the show, and I appreciate you tuning in here tonight. Good night to everyone out there. And folks, I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.
Bring us back.